You're listening to SurgeCast, a podcast made specifically for busy general surgery residents. All right, welcome back to SurgeCast. This is still the section of abdomen pancreas, and now the topic is endocrine pancreatic tumors. So why don't we go ahead and start with some basic anatomy and physiology?
So this is one of those areas of really hardcore basic anatomy that you've got to remember all the way back from medical school. So I'm going to run you through really quick a memory of all of these types of hormone-releasing cells in the pancreas, where they are and what they do. So pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors are hormone-secreting tumors. And the type of the hormone that the tumor secretes is pretty much going to give away exactly where this tumor should be located if you can remember your anatomy. So first off, alpha cells. Alpha cells secrete glucagon, and they're most commonly located in the tail of the pancreas. If you remember, glucagon basically antagonizes the effects of insulin, meaning it increases the concentration of circulating glucose, and its release is stimulated by low glucose. Beta cells secrete insulin. They're mostly located in the body and the tail of the pancreas. Insulin increases the uptake of glucose into cells, and its release is stimulated by high glucose levels. Next is your D cells. Those secrete both somatostatin and gastrin, and they're located in the body and the tail of the pancreas. Somatostatin decreases gastric emptying, decreases the release of all the other pancreatic hormones like glucagon and gastrin. Basically, for the purposes of the abcite, just think about it turning everything else down. Gastrin increases gastric acid release by the parietal cells in response to amino acids and vagal stimulation. And that's kind of why gastrinomas are located in that gastrinoma triangle, which is basically formed by the border of the duodenum, which is kind of the intersection of D2 and D3, the neck of the pancreas, and then the confluence of the cystic and common hepatic ducts. Next is D2 cells. D2 cells secrete VIP, or vasoactive intestinal peptide. Those are located in the body and the tail of the pancreas. VIP induces smooth muscle relaxation and inhibits gastric acid secretion. Lastly, F cells. F cells secrete pancreatic polypeptide and are generally located in the unstint process. And pancreatic polypeptide is induced by hypoglycemia and basically inhibits pancreatic secretion.
Okay, so I'll move into some epidemiology here. Pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors or PNETs are incredibly rare. The incidence is about 5 to 10 folks in a million. And in general, they represent about 1 to 3% of all pancreatic neoplasms. One way this is often tested is their association with genetic syndromes. And so if you see someone with a PNET, a pituitary tumor, and a parathyroid adenoma, you want to think about MEN1. If you see someone with a PNET, a pheochromocytoma, and a renal cell carcinoma, and or hemangioblastomas of the brainstem and retina, think von Hippel-Lindau.
So then you want to think about the diagnosis. So you basically have a couple big chunks of these. So first of all, your most common pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor overall is a non-functional tumor, and that's absolutely something you can be asked. The symptoms of those are pretty nonspecific: abdominal pain, weight loss, jaundice, if they're large enough to be causing compressive symptoms. And then the labs for that, sometimes those will have elevated pancreatic polypeptide or chromogranin A. So that's your most common neuroendocrine tumor overall, but then your most common functional tumor is the insulinoma. And so your insulinoma, you want to think about something called Whipple's triad, which is basically hypoglycemic symptoms, weakness, tachycardia, confusion. The patients are hypoglycemic at the time of symptoms, and then they have relief of symptoms with glucose administration. These patients often also have weight gain, and that's mostly because they start eating a lot more in order to prevent themselves from having hypoglycemic symptoms. The labs you need to get in order to kind of prove this is an insulinoma: patients will have a fasting glucose less than 55, that's hypoglycemia. They have an insulin level greater than 3, which is high. And then they also have a C-peptide level greater than 200, that's also high. And basically that C-peptide level really helps you distinguish this from exogenous insulin administration.
Okay, so I'll move on to gastrinoma then, sometimes seen in Zollinger-Ellison syndrome. The symptoms of this are abdominal pain, GERD, peptic ulcer disease, and diarrhea. Usually this is found in, as Catherine alluded to before, the gastrinoma triangle, or the head of the pancreas. Your laboratory values are going to show you a serum gastrin that's over 1,000, a gastric pH less than 2, and that's while they're off of proton pump inhibitors for at least 2 weeks. And one thing you can do is always get a secretin stimulation test to confirm that. And secretin generally leads to increased serum gastrin levels in these folks. The imaging for this is what's called an octreotide scan, aka somatostatin receptor scintigraphy, and that's done at nuclear medicine.
Next is your glucagonomas. So glucagonomas, this is this pattern of Ds that you probably heard about in medical school. That's dermatitis, diabetes, DVT, and necrolytic migratory erythema. And so to prove what that is, you get a lab test for glucagon, which is over 1,000.
All right, moving on to somatostatinoma. So this presents with diabetes, gallstones, steatorrhea, and hypochlorhydria. The labs for this show somatostatin level over 160.
And lastly, then, is your VIPoma. And so these patients have really high volume diarrhea. You're talking like 3 to 5 liters. So then they also have associated hypokalemia, achloridia, and metabolic acidosis, all associated with that diarrhea. The labs for this, you have to get an overnight fasting VIP level, and that's greater than 225. So in general, a lot of these have very specific symptoms that are associated with it just due to the elevation of that specific hormone. So just remembering all of those things. And then if you're asked, how would you test for this? Most commonly, the answer is going to be a serum test for the hormone of interest.
Okay, so let's go over kind of some imaging characteristics here about these PNETs. So in general, PNETs are hypoattenuating in both the early and late phases, but they actually enhance in the arterial phase. And that's in contrast to pancreatic adenocarcinoma, which is hypovascular in the arterial phase. Again, somatostatin receptor scintigraphy, that nuclear medicine test, can be used to identify gastrinomas. And another thing that you can do is what's called an arterial stimulated or venous sampling, and that can identify insulinomas or gastrinomas, especially if you have someone in your institution that can do that. And so what that would involve is arterial administration of calcium or secretin to stimulate the release of insulin or gastrin, respectively. And then after that, you kind of measure the portal venous or right hepatic venous hormone levels.
So next, you need to think about staging. So malignancy for pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors is really determined based on the presence or absence of mets. And then the staging of the tumors is based on several things that you might not always think about with other types of cancers. So that's Ki-67 proliferation, the mitotic rate, and the behavior of the tumor itself, meaning is it invading blood vessels or other organs? So well-differentiated tumors, which have a better prognosis, have Ki-67 proliferation less than 20% and low mitotic indices, that's those less than 20. And then poorly differentiated, which is kind of pancreatic neuroendocrine carcinoma, which carries a worse prognosis, has greater than 20% Ki-67 proliferation and higher than 20 mitotic indices per 10 high-powered fields.
Okay, so next we'll go into kind of the operative and non-operative treatment here, just kind of big general principles. So two things are going to determine whether or not these are actually resectable, and that's number one, the presence of distant metastases, and number two, local invasion. We talked about this before, but always remember that intraoperative ultrasound is something that we can use liberally to help us in these cases, especially because oftentimes these tumors can be really hard to identify. Insulinomas specifically that are greater than 2 millimeters from the pancreatic duct and less than 2 centimeters large can be treated with enucleation because they, generally speaking, have a lower rate of malignancy. And in fact, some gastrinomas can also be enucleated. That might be beyond the scope of this, but if they're confined to the duodenal mucosa or they're in the head of the pancreas and less than 5 centimeters, you can go ahead and enucleate those gastrinomas as well. One thing to kind of mention here is never forget you also have to do a regional lymphadenectomy. Larger tumors that are close to the pancreatic duct, generally speaking, we're going to end up doing a pancreatico-duodenectomy, a Whipple, or a distal pancreatectomy, depending on where that tumor is. And again, remember to do your regional lymphadenectomy. And for metastatic disease, if you were to operate, it would generally be for symptom control, and that would just be kind of surgical debulking.
So some of these patients are going to present at a late stage at which they're not operative candidates, or they happen to have other kind of medical problems that prevent them from being operated on. If that's the case, there are things you can help patients with to manage their symptoms. So for insulinomas, you want to think about encouraging these patients to have frequent small meals or be able to give them glucose in order to decrease their symptoms. Verapamil can also decrease hypoglycemia, and octreotide can be used for insulinomas. That helps to stabilize the tumor and decrease symptoms for those patients. For gastrinomas, particularly high-dose PPIs can help those patients have decreased risk from their acid secretion. VIPomas, you can help those patients with really aggressive rehydration and electrolyte management. And then glucagonomas, patients can have decreased symptoms through administration of octreotide.
Okay, so finally, let's just get into the outcomes here. So for insulinoma, again, remember, these are generally benign and most of them are resectable, almost 90%, nearly maybe a 90 to 100% survival for localized benign disease. If there's any evidence of distant metastasis, then that drops to about 30 to 50% five-year survival. For gastrinoma, that's about 50% metastatic on presentation, and the 10-year survival rate is about 30 to 90% depending on what stage they're at. For VIPomas, they're about 70% metastatic on presentation and about 70% five-year survival rate. Somatostatinomas are 90% metastatic on presentation and about a 30 to 60% five-year survival rate. And finally, glucagonomas have a five-year survival rate of about 85%. I don't think that all those outcomes are necessarily ABCITE or boards relevant. It's more just kind of for your general knowledge. Admittedly, this is probably one of the hardest things to study. And so I would say that this is one of the things you might want to push back to the day or two before the test to just kind of get it in your mind very concretely. So with all that being said, let's move on to the high points here. So Catherine, what is the most common functional pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor, and what is its prognosis?
So first of all, remembering that overall, the most common neuroendocrine tumor is a non-functional tumor. The most common of the functional tumors is the insulinoma. It's 90% benign, and as long as it's localized, that's a 90 to 100% survival.
Okay, now let's say you have a patient who is diagnosed with a PNET and also has associated ulcers. What would you kind of suspect in that patient as far as a diagnosis goes, and where would that be located most commonly?
So basically, you're looking at a gastrinoma. And that's really diagnosed by an elevated gastrin level and a low gastric pH. But remember, you have to get that pH after that patient has been off of PPIs. And you can use a secretin stimulation test to confirm. Most commonly, gastrinomas are located in the gastrinoma triangle, which is kind of the border of the duodenum, which is the intersection of D2 and D3, the neck of the pancreas, and then the confluence of the cystic and common hepatic ducts.
Awesome. And what characteristics are important when you're thinking about staging these folks?
So you want to think about the Ki-67 proliferation, the mitotic rate, and then the behavior. Are they invading blood vessels or other organs?
Okay, and finally, can you go over some of the operative treatments for pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors?
So big general strokes here. For metastatic lesions that are unresectable, you can use debulking to help relieve patients' symptoms. For small insulinomas, remember that kind of rule of twos that we talked about that are greater than 2 millimeters from the duct and less than 2 centimeters. Insulinomas that small can undergo enucleation due to the low rate of malignancy. And then finally, large lesions or those that are in close association with a pancreatic duct, you want to think about distal pancreatectomy or Whipple, kind of based on the location.
Okay, excellent. That'll wrap this one up. We'll see you for the next one. Thanks again for listening to SurgeCast.
You can find SurgeCast on Spotify or iTunes. Make sure you follow us on Instagram or Twitter @SurgeCastPodcast or find us at SurgeCastPodcast.com.